This week in KMA Land, Page County residents hear latest on proposed solar project. Contentious discussions continue over a new position in Montgomery County. Mills County tables a supervisors board expansion resolution. Rob Sand swings through southwest Iowa. Speed limit increase on two-lane highways take effect. Hendrickson takes the helm of the Hamburg School District, and the Page County Jail project is nearing completion. I'm Ethan Hewitt, filling in for the vacationing Mike Peterson. Well, Page County residents heard the latest on a proposed solar project near Clarinda. Mid-American Energy hosted an informational meeting on the Nottoway Valley Solar Project late Tuesday afternoon at the Clarinda Country Club and took questions from residents and local officials in attendance. Well, recently, company officials indicated they had filed for a permit with the Iowa Utilities Commission for the project, which calls for a 50-megawatt solar farm on roughly 400 acres just northeast of town, stretching along Redwood Avenue from near the Clarinda Correctional Facility up to the Neely Branch and over east of S Avenue. Mid-American Project Outreach Manager John Huff says there are several factors they consider when siting a solar project, including proximity to a transmission line. Another, he says, is landowners willing to have the project on their land.
We have to have people that want us to use their land. We don't use eminent domain for these kind of projects, and we don't intend to do that. So this is suitable land to host facilities with people who are excited about us building on the property that's currently theirs. And we have other considerations such as proximity to sensitive wildlife habitats, wetlands, waterways, all these sorts of things. So we are not overly close to some of those things in this case.
Huff says the necessary land for the project was acquired through voluntary purchase agreements in 2020, with no further land acquisition expected. Caden Easter is a project developer with MidAmerican. Easter says plans call for the construction of over 133,000 modules or panels and over 1,470 individual rows, with each module standing at 7 feet tall and 4 feet wide.
The maximum profile height, meaning full tilt, if the panel was basically straight in the air, is 15 feet above the elevation, the average ground elevation, and then it's 8 and 10 feet on average. And the tracking system that we use is pretty neat because it actually kind of runs with the land, so it minimizes any grading impacts during the construction period. The modules and trackers are mounted on pile-driven piers. They're spaced approximately 30 feet apart, and they do not have any concrete foundations.
The proposed substation would be located along Redwood Avenue in the southwest corner of the project area. In addition to a 6-foot security fence around the project area, Easter says they would also implement a vegetation management plan.
So soil is prepared and seeded with deep-rooted native grasses to maximize the soil health and minimize noxious weeds and help with runoff. Routine inspections are conducted to monitor the vegetation, identify any maintenance needs, including targeted weed management while necessary.
Well, Easter told KMA News that they expect an IUC ruling on their permit by the end of this year, with construction tentatively set to begin in the summer of 2027. The solar project would then be operational in December of 2028, with a project lifespan of 30 years. Well, more contentious discussion, but still no decision on an additional position in the Montgomery County Auditor's Office. At its regular meeting a Tuesday morning, the county's Board of Supervisors took no action on resolutions creating a part-time budget, finance, human resource director, or clerk's position in the county auditor's office. That's despite information presented by County Supervisor Alex Burton comparing auditor's office staffing in 5 counties above and below Montgomery County's population. Of the 10 surveyed, only Cass County in KMA Land has a position similar to that proposed by County Auditor Jule Ozuna, and that person works directly under the supervisors. Burton reiterated his opposition to the additional position based on public feedback.
I'm yet to hear from any of the residents that think this is a good thing to go ahead and spend the money. So I think potentially we could just discuss it and maybe we decide as a board to vote to not even move forward with pursuing additional job descriptions.
Ozuna replied she's heard overwhelming support from residents for the role. Ozuna proposed the job earlier this month, claiming she and her staff members were overworked, logging increased overtime hours, and unable to take vacations. Supervisors Chair Sharla Schmid says she wants more information, including a job description, before making any decision. That prompted an exchange with Ozuna, who questioned whether the board was being fair to her and her office.
Have claims ever not been done? Has anyone ever not got their paycheck? Has the budget ever not been adopted when it needed to be? Has anything in my office ever not been done? Has it been late? The only way for those things to continue is for us to continue to work and overwork. Is that fair? Is that fair? And I guess if you think that's fair, then that's fine. Don't.
Okay, no, don't throw the guilt on us.
I'm not.
Yes, you are.
Not.
I'm going to tell. No, right now, you and the treasurer's office are up to your elbows getting this implementation done on the software. I know you're both working 80 hours a week. I realize that, okay? Yes, I do support that you need help. My concern is, we'll get this person in, and from a business standpoint, is it a good, totally good decision?
Well, saying the board was kicking the can down the road, Supervisor Mike Olson restated previous concerns that the county must do something to address findings in the recent state auditor's report for fiscal year 2025.
What are we doing here? What's going on here? What is our job? What's our job description?
As supervisors?
What's our job description?
As supervisors?
Yes.
Well, there's a lot to that.
Well, yes, there is. But one of them is to serve the citizens of Montgomery County as best we can and provide the services and the guidance as best we can. And I feel what's going on right now in this courthouse is not serving the citizens of Montgomery County as best we can.
Well, after further discussion, Supervisor Brian Damas recommended postponing a decision on the position for a few months until the software conversion in the county auditor's and treasurer's offices is completed. Then it'll be another week before Mills County officials decide whether to place a question on the ballot about expanding the number of county supervisors. At its regular meeting Tuesday morning, the Mills County Board of Supervisors ultimately tabled action on a resolution to place a question on the November election ballot, asking voters whether to expand the board from 3 to 5 members. County Auditor Amber Farnan says that although she sent a copy of the resolution to both the Iowa State Association of Counties and the County Attorney's Office, they had only received a response from ISAC. Supervisor Jack Sayers says that while the ISAC representative had no issues, they recommended further discussions with the County Attorney's Office regarding the resolution.
She did not see any issues with the resolution, but she also expressed that we need to work with the County Attorney's Office on the matter. So I would ask for the Board of Supervisors if we can push resolution, table it until next week. That way it can be reviewed by the County Attorney's Office.
Well, Sayers indicated he would coordinate a time with the Attorney's Office ahead of next week's meeting to go over the resolution. The discussion followed public comment from a handful of residents who both expressed support for and opposition to expanding the board. County resident Chris Whitey emphasized that the resolution only places the question on the ballot, noting that his working group, Mills County Matters, intends to put together an informational campaign for voters.
And the Mills County Matters working group promises to research all the pros and cons from everybody, citizens and the supervisors, about why this would be or would not be a good thing, so that we can educate people by the time they get to the ballot box. They will understand the issue in great detail because there's both benefits and detriments. And not even everybody on our own working group is sold on the fact that this is universally a good thing. It's a complex issue.
While seeing both the pros and cons, Anderson Township resident Karen Seipold said she would like to see more community engagement and discussions prior to placing the question on the ballot, ensuring as many county voters as possible learn about the topic.
I can see there's pros and cons. But we don't have enough community discussion yet in the rural areas where you guys are our vital link. I don't believe we should put it on ballot yet, but I think it needs to be something that is pursued more in the community and those of us voters who are going to have to live with the repercussions of this. So we need a real balanced effort to figure out what this means for us, both cost-wise.
Well, under Iowa law, the board can approve the resolution on its own to place the question before voters, or a citizen's petition with the necessary amount of verified signatures can force a similar ballot question. On education and healthcare were among the various topics discussed during a town hall in Shenandoah with Iowa Democratic gubernatorial candidate Rob Sand. Sand, who is also currently the state auditor, made a swing through Southwest Iowa on Wednesday, including a stop at the Depot Deli, where over 100 residents had a chance to also ask questions about his campaign. Sand is set to face off with Republican gubernatorial candidate Zach Lane in the November general election after Kim Reynolds announced last year she would not be seeking re-election. Among the questions asked by attendees was how to improve the state's education system. Sands says one of the simpler steps is respecting teachers, criticizing the rhetoric used by his opponent in a campaign ad on education to reclaim the curriculum from the Marxists.
How do we get from the point of having 10 years of one-party control with Kim Reynolds as governor to a guy who's claiming that the people in charge of the curriculum are Marxists? That does not make sense. So there's a fundamental underpinning to improving public education, and it starts by having someone who is willing to say to teachers, I might have disagreements with you, but also, I respect you, and I appreciate the work that you do. I do respect teachers. I do appreciate the work that you do. I'm not going to call them names. I think they work hard.
Well, in addition to providing more funding for public schools, Sand also proposed reforms to how the state manages educational savings accounts, which set aside state funding equal to that of per pupil funding for families to send their children to private schools. Sand called for allowing the auditor's office to audit how private schools use the additional state funding, implement income limits, and limit tuition increases.
You can't just hike tuition by $7,500 that you got from the state, leaving it equally as unaffordable as it was before, right? If this is truly about school choice, then you would want to make the school more affordable, not just have them suck that $7,500 up. And then here's another one. If you want to take public money, you got to take the public. You can't just pick and choose which students are going to come in your front door.
Sand also called for reversing the privatization of Medicaid in Iowa. An executive order in 2016 turned the state's Medicaid program over to private companies known as managed care organizations, or MCOs. Sand pointed to healthcare providers struggling to get reimbursed for their services, or MCOs rejecting bills due to capitalization issues, or rejecting a batch of bills if one has an error.
They're doing this because the longer they can hold the money, the more money they make, the less money they pay out, the more money they make. They are happy to be doing it. It has also led to lower quality of care. Our audits found minimum, after incorporating feedback from the Kim Reynolds administration, a 500% increase in illegal denials of care. This system is broken. It was privatized by executive order 10 years ago. I will unprivatize it by executive order.
Other topics discussed during the town hall included addressing Iowa's cancer rate, state laws impacting local governments, data center development, changing the state's primary system to open rather than party-based, and water quality. More to come on This Week in KMA Land. Speed limit increase on two-lane highways take effect, and Hamburg's new school superintendent officially took over his new role. Welcome back to This Week in KMA Land. Well, state law enforcement agencies are among those urging motorists to use extra caution as increased speed limits on two-lane highways came to Iowa this week. Well, Iowa's new 60-mile-per-hour speed limit on most state highways and rural paved roads took effect on July 1st, after Governor Kim Reynolds signed Senate File 378 into law, increasing the default speed limit on most two-lane roads in the state from 55 miles per hour to 60. But the Iowa State Patrol was among the agencies urging motorists to err on the side of caution and obey posted speed limits. Trooper Ryan DeVault is the public resource officer with the patrol's District 3 office. DeVault told KMA News that they were hopeful the increased speed limit won't lead to more fatal crashes in Iowa, with speed a common factor in last year's fatal crashes.
Last year, we had 259 traffic fatalities, 115 of those involved speed. So speed is always a factor, or it seems to be a factor in a good majority of the accidents and the fatalities that we cover. We just don't want that number to increase with this increase in the speed limit.
DeVault notes that the increased speed limit does not apply to gravel roads, which will remain at 55 miles per hour during the day and 50 miles per hour at night. Additionally, DeVault says there could be some exceptions to the increased speed limit even on paved roadways.
The counties and the state can still possibly not change a speed limit on a roadway if there are traffic studies or they deem through engineering that that roadway is not safe enough to do 60 miles per hour, let's say a speed or a corner, a curve that's on that road. They have to have some factors to back that up, but a good majority of the roadways are going to be changed.
With vehicles moving slightly faster on the roadway, particularly ahead of the Independence Day holiday weekend, DeVault urges motorists to look farther down the road while behind the wheel and to increase their following distances.
Because you're going to be on those those objects or those dangerous areas a little quicker than normal, you know, whether it be a deer running out of the ditch or crossing the road ahead of you or traffic stopping ahead of you. You're going to be required to look further down the roadway with those speed limit increases. So, you know, then another thing to think about is your reaction time, right? If your vehicle is traveling that much faster and you have to react to something, it's going to take you a little bit longer. So we want people to make sure they're increasing their following distance.
While the law takes effect or took effect on July 1st, Avault notes that it could take some time for the Iowa DOT and county crews to update all necessary speed limit signs. Thus, he encourages motorists to follow the posted speed limit.
That may take a week or two for the DOT to get that done, you know, and the counties as well, because the two-lane county roads, it's the county's responsibility to get those signs changed. So I guess our best advice is, if for some reason you don't see that sign change to 60 miles per hour, err on the side of caution and maybe still go 55 if that's the signage that you see on that roadway, just to be safe.
Well, the bill also left other speed limits in place, such as the 25 mile per hour limit in residential areas and school districts. Well, a familiar figure is settling into his new administrative role with the Hamburg School District. As of Wednesday, Alec Hendrickson officially took the helm as the Hamburg School District Superintendent. Hendrickson succeeds Greg Cruikshank in the position after the Hamburg and Essex school boards opted not to renew a shared superintendent agreement for the 2026-27 school year. A 2012 Nishtabotna High School graduate, Hendrickson received his bachelor's degree from Peru State College and his master's degree from Northwest Missouri State. In his ninth year in public education, Hendrickson has served as a principal in Hamburg for 4 years and previously worked for 4 years as a social studies teacher in the Rockport R2 school district. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program recently, Hendrickson says he felt like the moving into the superintendent's position was the next natural step in his career.
I was very interested in just continuing to move forward in the administrative roles, the administrative process. I had a couple great mentors with Dr. Wells and Mr. Cruikshank, really, really good role models there that really piqued my interest more in this position.
Cruikshank, who had served as the shared superintendent for the two districts in the 2025-26 school year, will continue to serve as the Essex school superintendent. Hendrickson says his work as principal in Hamburg will serve him well in his new role, particularly at the Hamburg Charter High School.
Well, it's given me a lot of hands-on experience of knowing, of trying to help students earn these industry-recognized credentials, making strong partnerships with local businesses, creating strong career technical education programs, and that experience and knowing some of the financials behind that.
Well, the Hamburg School Board hired Gary Clark to serve as the pre-K-12 principal in 2026-27 school year. Hendrickson says the move allows the two administrators to focus solely on Hamburg.
The shared superintendency has been great for both districts. Obviously, though, there's a limited amount of time during the day. Can't be in two places at once. So being able to focus here, work closely with the principal, have a couple people's minds solely focused on one district, will hopefully help us continue to grow our charter school, continue to raise assessment scores, help create just a better school environment and better school climate.
Essex and Hamburg had shared the superintendent's position since 2019. Hendrickson also credited Cruikshank for his work to make the transition as seamless as possible. And the first county employees are expected to move into their new space at Peach County's jail next week. Meeting in regular session Tuesday, the county's Board of Supervisors heard an update on the 19,600-square-foot facility from Chris Falk of Samuels Group. Falk says the state fire marshal's office inspected the facility on Tuesday and cleared a portion of the building for the county's dispatch operations to move in.
He did a full inspection of the fire alarm system and the sprinkler system. We passed that inspection, so now we can have, he gave us partial occupancy for the dispatch, so we can move dispatch come the 7th, 8th, and 9th.
While work progresses on the rest of the building, Falk says the initial inspection by the fire marshal should speed things up during future inspections.
He won't have to do the testing and inspection on a lot of the systems. He'll just do a walkthrough. Want to look at some stuff back in the jail area before he gives us occupancy back there. Right now, it's just dispatch. They're the only ones that can be in there.
Well, Falk reports that the facility's driveway has mostly been poured, except for a small section that connects it to Highway 71. He says floors in the facility are in the process of receiving a coat of epoxy, which, while work is nearing completion on the entry vestibule. Additionally, Falk says most of the facility's security features still need to be programmed before becoming operational.
There is a lot of security technology that has to be programmed in and stuff. A lot of it is installed. They're just waiting on a couple other pathways so they can finish up and then they can start programming.
Well, contractors are expected later this week to begin work on installing a backup generator for the facility. Representatives from both the architectural firm and engineering team will walk through the facility for the week of July 13th with the project's contractor to identify punch list items to close out the project. Aretto Command faces election misconduct charges stemming from a 2024 incident. The Montgomery County Sheriff's Office says 36-year-old Joseph Christopher Norris was arrested Wednesday for first-degree election misconduct, a Class D felony. Authorities say the arrest stems from an incident that occurred in November 2024. According to the criminal complaint obtained by KMA News, authorities allege that Norris performed his duties and responsibilities as an election official in a manner that hindered the fair, orderly, and efficient administration of the election and counting of the absentee ballots on Election Day. Records indicate the incident occurred at the Montgomery County Courthouse at around 3 p.m. on November 5th. The sheriff's office says deputies were assisted by the Iowa Attorney General's office in the investigation, during which it was determined charges were to be filed. Norris was taken to the Montgomery County Jail and held on a $5,000 bond. In Pottawatomie County, officials have backed new school resource officer agreements with multiple school districts, including an increase in cost. At its regular meeting Tuesday, the county's Board of Supervisors unanimously approved renewing the SRO agreements between the Pottawatomie County Sheriff's Office and the Trainer, Underwood, Riverside, AHSDW, and Tri-Center School Districts for the 2026-27 school year. Well, the board's approval also includes a $2,000 increase in cost for participating school districts, raising the annual amount from $20,000 to $22,000 per district. Supervisor Tim Wickman had proposed the increased contribution from the school districts to keep up with rising costs for providing the deputies for the SRO position.
The third year with this, and we've had increases in our deputies' salaries. We've had increases health costs.
Well, per the agreement, the officers primarily assist school administrators by taking immediate action when law enforcement intervention is warranted and provide guidance and support in assisting school staff, students, and parents with law enforcement-related matters. Wickman suggested the increase in the school district's contribution due to the county not being able to fairly levy for the role.
In the general fund, it taxes people in Council Plus that already have their own, and Lewis Central that already have their own. If you tax on the rural, it doesn't include anybody in the city. School districts, the AHSTW, has students that live outside the outside Pottawatomie County, as does Tri-Center. So to recover the increase in costs, I would like to see the board consider increasing the cost to those school districts.
Supervisors Chair Brian Shea says the deputies do still provide their services outside of the school buildings.
They also are out in the county, and their full shift is not just in that school. No. And that's a big deal.
Yeah.
I think with the funding of the schools, they're struggling pretty hard too, as we are. And the sheriff and chief deputy think this is a fantastic program here.
Well, Supervisor Jeff Jorgensen says the SRO agreement has been a good partnership, with several of the schools appreciative of the sheriff's office providing deputies for the role. Well, the county had entered the agreement in 2023 with the multiple districts on the caveat that they received a state grant to help cover their portion of the costs. Well, that wraps up this week in KMA Land. Listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Ethan Hewitt. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for 100 years.